Grizzlies trying to get it back together after a rough four-game road trip. Back at home tonight, taking on the Pacers. We'll talk about it. Plus, answer all of your questions in the long-awaited and finally here Q&A. That's all coming up. You are Locked On Grizzlies.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi there, everybody. Welcome into Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston, host of this here podcast. Also hosting Wolo and Peter in the Morning, 7 to 10 each and every weekday morning on Sports 56 and 87.7 FM. The numbers game contributor for the Commercial Appeal, covering Grizzlies and NBA stuff. And also, of course, I do this podcast here. And you can find me on Twitter at Peter Edmiston, where I throw some fun stuff up and some non-fun stuff every now and then. I mean, just full disclosure, most of it's fun. Anyway, so let's start today by talking a little bit about the Pacers game tonight, and a very interesting game and a huge game for the Grizzlies because they got to get back on track. It's just time to close out with a little something, because you know this all the talk, the 0-4 road trip. You know, we talked about it yesterday on the pod. We've talked about it ad infinitum, and I think there have been some great pieces written of late. Kevin Leip had a great piece. Matt Herdlicka had a great piece. Chris Harrington writing about this. I wrote about it. Danny Chow, The Ringer, wrote about it. There's this kind of swirling narrative that is around and has been around the Grizzlies forever and comes around the Grizzlies around this time of year in most seasons. It's just, are they old? Are they tired? What's happening? Why are they struggling so much? All of these things that just seem to be consistent points of emphasis and discussion around this time of year. And it can be very frustrating, I would imagine, as a fan, to have to go through all of this on a consistent basis. Like, you know, to have to psychoanalyze your team from afar and figure out, are they into it? Are they not? Do they care? What's the deal? All those kinds of things and you just want to watch a damn basketball game, and you just want to be part of that, and you just want to bring the analysis. And see, this is where I come in, because you know, on the radio side and here on the podcast, I tend to take a little more of a, you know, I don't know, approach where we start to get into some of those kinds of things. Writing, I tend to try to write pretty straightforward stuff, give you a numerical analysis, give you facts, give you those kinds of figures, and let you sort of make the determination for yourself as to what you think the root causes, or if there's a bigger, like, the overriding script or narrative that's running through it. But, you know, in cases like this, I think from afar, and I see people like Matt Moore of CBS Sports and others who follow the team on a national level and who are very well versed in what's going on, and but aren't necessarily, you know, touched and tapped into the local scene, I think they overlook that overriding feeling and that narrative, the thing. It's like an impending something that's going on that you know is going to have to happen. And it's almost like like if you're at the end of a relationship and you know that, you know, it's going to end badly. You know that you're going to have to go your separate ways. Or if you're at the end of, like, you've had somebody that's struggling with a long illness. You know, at some point, even if it's something that's very sad, there can be a great relief in having that page turned. I think that was some of the issue with Chandler Parsons, is having that page turned. And then I think that takes away one of the distractions that was problematic for the Grizzlies this year. And, you know, please don't come at me with, like, you know, I can't believe you compare the Grizzlies to separation or divorce or long-term illness. It's not that serious. No, it's not that serious. No one's actually literally making that comparison. Those just happen to be things that are all-encompassing in your life. And in the sense of basketball, grit and grind is all-encompassing within the Grizzlies' frame of mind, the framework, what they do, who they are, all that stuff. It is all about that. And that is going to have to change probably very soon, and that generates stress. It has been talked about forever, but we finally now are seeing, I think, the seeds of change actually starting to sprout. Like they've already been sown. They've been sown for years, but they never actually started to sprout. And in this sense, like, you know, this permadeath of grit and grind, or this perma dying of grit and grind is probably a better way to phrase it, has been happening for years. And we have been seeing on the horizon, it's coming. And you don't, grit and grind as an ethos, as a manner of approaching a basketball game. That's what I'm referring to here. The mentality, not necessarily the specific style of play. You could have a grit and grind mentality. You can have a grit and grind ethos. You can have that running through the core of your being without necessarily playing a specific style of basketball on the court. Now, I do think that there's probably a bit of determinism in that if you come into a situation with grit and grind mentality, you are probably going to play a more physical brand of basketball. You are probably going to play, a little slower. I think that those probably do go hand in hand, but I don't think it's necessarily an absolute certainty. I'm speaking here about the death of grit and grind as a mentality, as an approach that is synonymous with Memphis. And I think that's one of those things that David Fizdale was brought in to ultimately do. He was brought in to ultimately shepherd Memphis and the Grizzlies organization away from grit and grind into a more permanent, settled culture that comes from the top down, that incorporates some of the stuff that the Miami Heat have done, not just about the core four, and not just about, you know, one or two guys, but about a coach, a front office, the whole thing, a culture in the corporate sense of the word, to replace what is, you know, kind of a culture that has been defined by the people in the locker room rather than the team that built the locker room. You know, you typically want to see, with the most stable organizations, the ones that have had the long-term sustained success, you see a mentality that comes from the top down, and the players fit the mentality, not vice versa. But I think the Grizzlies have kind of done it in the other direction, where you've seen the players generate that mentality that then the organization has tried to scramble and do something with. That's not the most sustainable approach. And when the players start to age and start to lose effectiveness, start to dislike certain things, start to get in a bad frame of mind, whatever it may be, then you get these kinds of results. It is not an accident. It is not a coincidence that the Grizzlies have hit swoons around this time of year fairly often, pretty much every year. It's not a coincidence that the Grizzlies, with this current core group, have struggled to get over the hump. They've been close, and then they always seem to be self-destructive to some extent. It's just not long-term. The level of success that you're talking about is capped out. There's a ceiling to it. That's what David Fizdale's talked about. He's talked about there being, you know that the results, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a certain level, and then that's it. They're not going to break through that ceiling without overhauling and changing everything. But by overhauling and changing everything, you then open up the trap door. You then open up the possibility that you could then sink and pew, go down and be bad for a while before hopefully getting yourself back up. Look at the Sixers. Look at a lot of these teams. When you lose your mojo, there's no guarantee you're going to ever get it back again, at least not for a long time. So I get that there's a fear, that there's a grip on grit and grind, but I would tell you that it has, this gets into like, I guess I'm feeling philosophical because I've read all these pieces and we've talked about it for the last few weeks and all that, and you're kind of seeing the end of the season upcoming, and even though the playoffs are, I think we all kind of know that, you know, there's big fish to fry this offseason, so it's on everybody's mind. So you'll forgive my little soliloquy here, but this gets down to like the whole point of doing this stuff. Why are you watching? Why are you a fan? Why do you want to do it? Why are you a Grizzly fan? What is it that you get out of it? You know, it's not just about the pure opportunity to win a championship. This is where the tension comes in my mind at least, between the fans, grit and grind and all that, and the front office. The front office's job, David Fizdale's job, those guys that were brought in, their job is to try to win at the highest possible level and to win a title. But as a fan, you may, and you are right to get pure joy out of watching this team as it's constituted now do its thing and stymie better teams, more talented teams, put the whammy on the Warriors, put the whammy on the Spurs, put the whammy on whoever, you know, play really well against good teams. That there's a joy in that. There's a certain that ethos I was talking about really has permeated the city. And, you know, you have to go back and wonder, you know, was it the city that formed this to these guys? Was it the guys that formed it to the city? I don't know, but that's a very valuable thing. And as Kevin Light pointed out in his piece, I mean, the Grizzlies have capitalized on that organizationally, on the business side. That's what they've really made a lot of hay with. But that isn't going to get you that long-term championship that the front office and Fizdale are trying to ultimately achieve. As a fan, you're paying your season ticket money. You want to go watch. You want to go watch the style. You want to go do this. You want to see these feisty kinds of games. And at the very highest level of grit and grind, you can, you know, there's the it allows you to dream of things that would be fantastic and lets you see things in the frustrations of players. And it's that mentality that's so special, but there is a limit to it and there's a ceiling to it. And also alongside of it is the frustrating downside, which we've seen when the team isn't locked in and when they aren't focused, they look horrible because the talent has always exceeded, you know, as a collective, they've always exceeded the sum of their individual parts. And when they don't act as a collective and when they're not mentally into it, then the sum of the parts is what it is. And it's not good enough. So this gets to the heart of why you do. I mean, if sports can't just be about winning a title, because only one team wins a title in every sport. That's it. So the other teams, what did you, was your entire season for naught? Did it not matter? No, there were great things in those seasons. There was joy, there was excitement, there were positives, there were negatives, there were storylines. It mattered. It mattered to the players, it mattered to the fans. But, you know, I think we get too caught up in that chase for the title, or, you know, looking at it through that prism, and we forget about the joys of just being a fan and enjoy it. And that's where I think this kind of, there's a fork in the road here, because people can see that. I think everyone knows truly, like, honestly, if you give yourself an account, you know that at the end of the day, the best thing to do long term is to rebuild. That's the way that the Grizzlies are going to win a championship. They are not going to win a championship with this core group. Just not going to happen. And that's okay. That's okay. It's okay to admit that. It's okay to talk about that publicly. They are not going to do it. They have to overhaul things. You know, the specifics of that we would get into, you know, much further down the road. But there's going to have to be a big change. And I think everyone knows that. But is it worth giving up those moments of connection and joy, and the fact that the Grizzlies have connected with the city and the fans connect with the team, and there is that, and there's that feeling that exists that has not existed in Memphis on a professional level ever, and only rarely has truly existed even with the college teams in the town? There is that connection that exists. Do you damage it forever if you blow the thing up? We can recognize that the best thing to do competitively, long term, the only way to truly grab that brass ring is to kind of break this thing down, tear down a lot of the pieces, and start over. But actually doing that, the process of doing that will be long and difficult and painful and will require separation from people, from concepts, from that mentality that has become so entrenched in the city, and that's hard. So this is why the moment feels big, because it is big. It is big. And there is a choice that can be made. David Fizdale would argue, and has already said, that that there is no choice. The choice has been made for you. The league has changed around you, and that merely existing and currently, you know, trying to rage against the dying of the light with this team is in itself a choice, an active affirmative choice to resist getting better long term, to cling to something in the short term that feels good but isn't going to actually win you anything. But then the fans could say on the other side, is the purpose of it merely to win everything at the highest level all the time? Or can you not enjoy these moments? And can you not accept the fact that this is probably not going to lead to a title, but that's okay because we really enjoy seeing these guys do their thing for the last year or two or however long this run would go on if you would let it? I apologize. This thing has kind of gotten out of control, but I really, these are things that I'm just kind of emptying my brain on this one. And I get an opportunity to talk to you guys about it. And, you know, it kind of feels like this is that kind of a moment. So forgive me for this little rant. I hope it made sense. It may not have, but I'm trying. And I'd like your thoughts. So hit me up on Twitter at Peter Edmiston. Tell me what you think about it. And we'll talk a little bit about the Pacers here, and then we're going to get to the Q&A. All right, to actual basketball stuff we go. Grizzlies and the Pacers at it tonight. Grizzlies, goes without saying, certainly need a win just to get that funk out of the way and to kind of to move on from what was a bad stretch. As to whether Marc Gasol will play or not, I have no idea at this point. He is still dealing with the left foot strain that kept him out of the last two games. I haven't heard nothing about the severity of the injury other than just what you know, that he didn't play and that he was listed as doubtful for the Kings game before being ruled out. So, you know, that would indicate that he was a little closer in that ball game than he was in the Warriors game. But, you know, his health is paramount to this team having any kind of chance for, you know, postseason success, whatever that postseason success would be judged on, or whatever you would consider a successful postseason run. It has to be with Marc Gasol in the mix. So his health is important. No need to push him if you don't need to do that. Meanwhile, the Pacers on the other side of the matchup, they come in having lost on Tuesday to a pretty bad Timberwolves team that was reeling. They had lost, I think, seven straight going into that game. They won on the road in Indy based on a really bad four-minute stretch at the end of the game. Pacers pretty much blew the game. They were up four with a minute to play, and they ended up losing the game they really had to win. The Eastern Conference playoff standings are very tight down at the bottom, and they needed that one desperately, didn't get it. And afterwards, listen to Paul George's comments, and you can get the sense that this is going to be a Pacers team that comes in mentally on a different and probably not a real healthy kind of terrain.
We should have a professional approach, man. Defend our home court, especially to a team that's not even in playoffs. That's what it comes down to. As a team, we got to have a grit. We got to own up. We got to man up.
In some ways, is it better having Memphis tomorrow, a game tomorrow to focus on, change your attention to immediately?
It's tough. You know, it's tough. It's a game here that we need, knowing that we don't play well on the road. You know, we lose focus here. Not sure where our head is going to be as a team tomorrow. Make sure I try to gather these guys around and let them understand, man, we got to win. It's the only thing that's important. It's the only thing that should be motivation is winning.
What did you see that didn't work on those last 4 minutes? Because you had as lead as big a nine, and they obviously come back and rally.
To be honest, man, I don't think I got the ball enough down the stretch.
Yeah, there you go. A little infighting. A little drama. I don't think I got the ball enough down the stretch, says Paul George. Flat out. Okay. So that's where the Pacers are at coming into this game. There is truly no excuse. The Grizzlies have to play much, much better, and they need to win this game. I get that, like, from a standings perspective, it's not really vital to win this game. You're kind of locked in at 7 right now. You could claw your way up to 6, maybe even 5. You're 3.5 back of the Clippers and 5. But, you know, getting to 5 is going to be tricky. The Clippers do not have a difficult schedule. They got just the 7 games left. The Grizzlies have a really easy schedule left. And if you get to 5 and play the Jazz, then that's one thing. That's a better matchup. But I am certainly in the category of people that would prefer to see the Spurs rather than the Rockets. And I realize that that's a controversial kind of spot to be in. But that's just the way it goes. I think the Rockets, as they're constituted right now, are a terrible matchup for the Grizzlies. And the Spurs, although they are going to be a very difficult matchup and you kind of know what you're dealing with and they are a juggernaut and all that, you've seen the 3 games so far have been really competitive, really tight. You could see how the Grizzlies can put together a strategy that would work. They've had opportunities. They obviously won the first 2 and had a good opportunity to win the 3rd one. They're one of the few teams that's beaten the full-strength Spurs this year. Yeah, I think the Spurs will be a little bit of a different animal in the postseason, but that's a better matchup to me than the Rockets, who I think just are almost surgically engineered to exploit everything the Grizzlies can do. So that's where I would stand on that. So I don't think it's really that big of a deal making that push. What is a big deal is playing better. And I tweeted this out earlier. The Grizzlies at this point in the season, as happens every year, they are really struggling. And the month of March has been pretty well disastrous for the Grizzlies. You're talking about, and I put the chart up. If you check my Twitter feed, you can see the chart that I put together. But in the month of March, the Grizzlies have a 103.7 offensive rating, 110.5 defensive rating. That's a minus 6.8 net rating. So they've been 6.8 points per 100 possessions worse than their opponents. You know, the month before, that was a plus 5.5. It was about even in January. It was plus 4 in December and minus 3 in November. So they've really tanked. And the troubling thing is that typically this year, the Grizzlies, their defense has cycled with their pace. So that as they play slower, they play better defensively. And as they play quicker, they play better offensively, but worse defensively. And that's been kind of the push-pull all year long to figure out what's the right pace, how do you play, what do you do, knowing those factors. Well, the troubling thing for the Grizzlies and what is especially problematic is that their pace has actually slowed. They are playing by far their slowest basketball in the month of March, and yet their defense is at its worst level in the month of March. So that has broken. That connection is broken. And now you're seeing that not only are they playing slowly, but they're not defending either. Those two things cannot coexist. That's not going to work. And they really slow down. And if Zach Randolph has to start again tonight against the Pacers, then they really slow down. When Zach is a starter, they average 91 possessions, which puts them way, way last in the league. And they're just under 94 in this month overall, as is. You throw in Zach, and that slows down even more. It's just the nature of that play. You put him out there, and they gravitate. You can't run up-tempo. It doesn't happen with that personnel. So I would advocate for starting Brandon Wright and just to keep your tempo up, to give you a little impetus. And then you can bring in Zach as per usual off the bench, doing his thing. His numbers are better off the bench this year. In his 5 starts, the numbers have not been especially good. He basically gives you the same production in 32 minutes as a starter as he does in 23 minutes off the bench, which tells you again the matchups are more advantageous and the team plays better, it's smoother. So I am advocating that the Grizzlies should start Brandon Wright alongside Jermichael Green if Marc Gasol cannot go. And again, I have no idea whether Mark will be able to go or not. The Pacers, for what it's worth, their desperation stems from the fact that they are just two games out of ninth. You know, they're in seventh place right now, and they are in the playoffs. But the Bulls, who, as unlikely as it is, they are like on the cusp of getting themselves back into the playoff mix. And it's pretty crazy to think that. The Heat had a huge win against the Pistons, also at the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings. And so the Heat right now are in eighth spot. The Bulls are in ninth spot. Pacers are in seventh spot, but only two games separate those three teams, meaning that a Pacers loss, you know, you start to jeopardize their playoff spot altogether. And they've struggled. They've not been an especially good road team. They are one of the worst road teams in the Eastern Conference. You know, they've only won 11 games on the road. That's the second lowest win total. Only Brooklyn is worse, and Brooklyn, of course, came into FedEx Forum and won. So I don't know how much that means, but they are not a good road team. It's a good opportunity for the Grizzlies to get the mojo back and to break this losing streak. So we will see if they can do it, but they're going to have to play a lot better. They're going to have to muster up some energy. The truth is that all those signs that we've seen from the Grizzlies year in and year out, and this year is the same as ever, it's just they don't have the energy. Part of it is age-related. Part of it is style-related. They just not a lot of effective depth. You know, Mike Conley especially looks tired right now. You know, he's got to get a little extra zip from somewhere because, you know, Andrew Harrison has had his moments this year, but there's not a lot of faith. I think that he's really going to be a difference maker out there. He can hold down the fort to some extent, but that's about it. Mike's really having to take on a lot of the scoring load, especially with Mark out, and the strain is showing. You got to find an extra little bit of energy from somewhere, and the Grizzlies typically haven't been very good at doing that late in the season. They kind of get a little second wind in the playoffs, but late in the regular season, it has been a struggle. So we'll see how that goes. But the Grizzlies 2.5 back of the Thunder in the sixth spot, 3.5 back of the Clippers in the fifth spot, back at FedEx Forum tonight. Yeah, it's time. It is time for Q&A. You guys gave me a lot of great questions. I appreciate it, and I'm glad to finally get a chance to do it. I was going to do it earlier in the week, and I don't know, the timing of these games, and it just didn't feel like it was the best time to do it. So now we got a good chance. We got a pod, not a post-game pod, but just a regular pod. So we can finally do it. And if you guys lasted through my blathering earlier in the podcast, then you deserve a good little Q&A. So let's get it done. Right out of the gate, my buddy Greg Gaston, who does the show after mine over on Sports 56 and 87.7 FM, middays from 10 to 1 with Eli Savoy. Greg hit me up with the very first question right out of the Q&A. Says, first time tweet, long time follower. Thank you, Greg. What would constitute a successful season for the Grizzlies? That's the old philosophical approach there. I mean, technically, at this point, this core group has made the Western Conference Finals. They've made plenty of playoff runs. You know, I don't know how you would necessarily, you know, what success would be to them, because they've done a lot of stuff, and they've done a lot of stuff at lots of different levels, beaten, you know, lots of teams, postseason, done those things. I don't know that they would be real thrilled with just making the playoffs. That's not a successful season. What's a successful season, I think, at this point now, just being realistic, is making the playoffs, which, barring some unbelievable turn of events, they will certainly do, and having probably a good like 6-7 game series with the Spurs, giving them a really good fight before bowing out respectfully. That's probably the level of success we're talking about here. You know, you're not talking about the opportunity to win big. We talked about that earlier in the podcast. You're not winning big. This core group's not winning a championship. So in that sense, I think that's the successful part of it. Now, what would have been a successful season in an ideal world would have been, you know, Chandler Parsons being integrated into the mix and the Grizzlies really starting and actually making that move from their core group now to whatever this new thing is going to be, and Parsons being a big part of that. But once Parsons' situation unfolded the way it did, that was out the window. So I think you have to look at success right now in a very limited fashion and then reassess what happens in the offseason and figure out whether you want to blow the thing up or what. Speaking of which, that brings me to my next question, which is from DB, just DB. He is at OkieTech623. And by the way, my friend Greg Gaston, his Twitter handle is at Greg_Gaston, so I didn't want to forget about that. But this is at OkieTech, OkieTech623, who says a two-tweet question, so a good one. With the state of the roster, salary cap, lack of draft picks, etc., do we have a legitimate chance to compete with Mark and Mike ever? Not just our usual tough out / team nobody wants to play, but a legitimate title chance, or should it all be blown up? That goes back to the very heart of the discussion that I had in the first 10, 15 minutes of this podcast. And the answer is this team will not win a title with Mark and Mike and whoever, unless that whoever is a, you know, dramatic upgrade. You'd have to somehow, you know, luck into a really impactful draft pick or somebody like that, because they don't, you know, and then that has to be next offseason, because this coming offseason they don't have a pick in the draft. Now, I guess you can make a trade or whatever, but yeah, at this point, to get an impactful draft pick alongside Mark and Mike would be difficult, and you'd have to wait for a while. And then even if you wait for a while, then you're talking about Mark towards the end of his career. So to me, the short answer is no. They will not. They don't have a legitimate chance to compete at the highest level with this current group as it's constituted. They will be the, quote, team nobody wants to play. That's the ceiling. So should it all be blown up, it goes back to that question about what do you think as a fan, what is your goal? Is your goal strictly to have a team that you support win a championship? If that's the case, then yes. The answer is it should be blown up, because they're not winning a championship with this current group as it is. And the ways that they would need to accomplish getting the pieces that are good enough to make you win a championship would require you to trade those pieces that you need to build around. So it wouldn't work. You know, that is to say, you wouldn't be able to keep both Mark and Mike and also bring in high-level impact guys to be third and fourth bananas behind those two guys. Chandler Parsons was your chance at that. He was the high-profile, highly compensated third banana. And that is looking very, very bad at this point. It's looking far more likely that he's going to be, if anything, a, you know, marginal piece, but and maybe a decent contributor if he gets healthy. But you know, the highest ceiling of what he can do, you have to really bring that ceiling down quite a bit based on what we know about his situation as it stands. So for me, you know, the answer of should it all be blown up just depends on what you want. And you also have to remember, too, that you're blowing it up. If you make that determination, right now, I don't know. You can't trade Chandler Parsons' deal. I mean, you know, I think Parsons is nigh on unmovable based on where he's at now. So that's something that you're probably going to be stuck with. Mike Conley would certainly be tradable in this scenario. If we're talking we're just putting everything on the table. Mike, even though he's got a big contract, I would think you could move him. I just don't know that you would necessarily get back for him what you think you should in a deal that involves that level of player and that level of player and the importance for your franchise. So I think he's probably he would not be going anywhere. And that leaves Mark. And I don't know what the market is for Mark, but I will admit that I have thought about it in the offseason just based on, you know, my reporting and writing and what's been discussed a lot about how the different approaches that Mark and David Fizdale have to basketball and, you know, all that stuff. Will they be able to find common ground And if they couldn't, would that kind of encourage or at least open up the once unthinkable possibility of trading Mark? I think that's at least going to come up in a discussion. I don't think that they're going to do it, and I don't think that, you know, I don't know what the market would be. I think it's an interesting like exercise to figure out what's the market for a 32-year-old center of Mark's unquestioned quality, all-star status, but the league is changing. Now Mark has shown the ability to go and hit that outside shot now. He is a good facilitator. You know, defensively, he has slipped this year, but you know, he has quite a pedigree defensively. Can you build your team around him in the way that's going to win a title? That's a fair question. How much would you get for a player of his age at, you know, as a big man? I don't know. I don't know if that would be worth it, you know, trade wise. Even if you would trade him, I don't know if what you get back would be worth doing, would be worth going through this whole enterprise. So these are tough questions that you ask, DB, and they require more than just like a token kind of answer. So yeah, I don't know. Should they blow it up if they come to the conclusion that they can't win big with this group? That's a question that you, each individual fan and each individual listener, will have to make their own determination of how big their tolerance is for that kind of thing. Because remember, when you blow it up, man, you got years in the wilderness. And, you know, Grizzly fans have not. So this will be the first test of what I think is really like real Grizzly fandom. People that have been inculcated in Grizzly culture for years now. Young people, you know, people that have grown up through their formative years, elementary school, middle school, into high school. Their Grizzlies have been in the playoffs pretty much the whole run. Now, when they're not, will they keep coming? Will there still be 14, 15, 16,000 at FedEx Forum, or will it be 10? Will it be 8? Will it be, you know, cavernous echoes as it was, you know, when the Grizzlies were really, really bad before? I don't know. Again, all these things inform the decision and inform how open you should be to blowing the thing up. JJ Baker, who is at JJ_P_Baker, and he is in Australia. So I appreciate you listening from all the way in Australia. I am a big fan of your great nation and your great people. All the Aussies I have ever known have been pretty much awesome and been tremendous fun. So thank you for listening. Now, JJ asked the question, hindsight is 2020, but what non-Parsons situation could have seen this team in a better place for playoffs, deadline, rotations, etc.? Well, again, you know, I've said this before. You know, taking the Parsons stuff off the table and just assuming that that's going to go how it's going to go, I still think, and you look at yesterday or day before the game against the Kings, that was the situation that showed itself. I just refuse to believe that there couldn't have been a deal done for Darren Collison. I refuse to believe that the Kings were so committed to whatever it is, culture, whatever, what do you want to call it, that they were going to keep Darren Collison at all costs. I think a deal could have been done. And I suggested Jarrell Martin and, you know, Troy Daniels or Jarrell Martin and Vince Carter, something along those lines. I have to think that Sacramento would have been interested in talking and making something like that happen. That would have made this team better. That would have made this team a much more dangerous team. If you can take those minutes that are being played by Andrew Harrison now and put a guy like Darren Collison in there instead, you'd first of all see more minutes. So Mike Conley would be playing fewer minutes. And then the minutes that he'd play alongside Collison out there, you know, you have two legitimate scoring threats along with two legitimate facilitators. And, you know, right now that's not the case with Harrison. He can facilitate to an extent and he could score kinda, but he's certainly no threat as a shooter and he's not particularly fast. There's a lot, yeah, you know, just not, it's not great. He's not great. We all know that. So that would be the number one thing that I think would be make them in a much better place for the playoffs. I also think that you know, they haven't necessarily had the luxury of doing this stuff. They've had, you know, really, it's been stop-start kind of year with injuries and all that stuff. But I would have liked to have seen a way to work Deontay Davis into the mix a little bit more to give you a little more of an athletic big that is a true defensive force. We've seen, I think it's fair to say, the limitations of Brandon Wright as a defensive player. He can defend up to a point, and he can shot block up to a point, but he is not a defensive force, and not in the way that Deontay Davis could be if everything went well. Now, I don't know that even if you gave Deontay Davis bigger minutes and a bigger role, if he would be ready at this point, but he would at least give you something different and an option that you could use to match some of the teams and some of the more athletic bigs that you see out there from the Grizzlies' opponents. Yeah, they don't really have anybody to match up with that. That would be something I would have liked. That's kind of a bit of a pipe dream, but that would have put them in a better place as well. So the backup point guard issue, they just had to do something about it. They just had to. And the fact they didn't, and they stuck with Tony Douglas as long as they did, and they, you know, tried to squeeze, and they're trying to squeeze everything they can out of Andrew Harrison. That to me signals that they just weren't willing to push all the chips in for this year. That they had accepted organizationally that this year probably was going to be what it's going to be, and they weren't willing to sacrifice in order to make that happen. You know, were they right? I don't know. It depends on, you know, which way you look, but certainly in terms of this year, it's going to make your team worse. And so they are. Sam Hyatt at S Hyatt 501 asks, why do we suck? I'm just going to leave that there. David has a question. He wants to know, was last year's Grizzlies team pre-injury a better team than this year's team? What made each team better or worse? The answer to that, I would say, is even pre-injury, pre-Marc Gasol broken foot, pre-Mario Chalmers, pre-everything else, I would say that the Grizzlies this year in general are a better team than last year. They certainly are much better offensively. And defensively, yeah, I think it's a little bit of a push. The Grizzlies are not as good on the interior, but they're better contesting. They are a little more, they're a little better equipped and better mentally in handling the outside shooting. If you remember the controversy early last year, first couple months of the year, Zach being sent to the bench, then coming back, Grizzlies never could get a grip on those kinds of teams, and they got blasted as a result. They had all those blowouts last year. They were mentally really fragile even before the injury. Mark was really grumpy. It wasn't a good year. So this year's Grizzlies, I think, are better even than the pre-injury Grizzlies from last year. But you know, they're both two sides of the same coin in the sense that this core group has always kind of been. There's been a little agitation. There's been some. There's always been something that's been amiss, and so, you know, last year it was stuff with Jaeger and stuff with the defense, and then the injuries. This year it's the stuff with Fizdale and some of the schemes and all that stuff. So that's, but that, I mean, it's they're not too far apart. And then finally, Koldar Arg at Koldar Arg asks, did I forget David's handle? I did. I'm sorry. David at David Loves Grizz. David Jones had that question. Koldar Arg, though, his question, the final one, at Koldar Arg, KULDARARG, has two questions. One, who deserves more playing time? Who deserves less? I would say the rotation's kind of pretty much what it's going to have to be. I would think you'd want to work more Brandon Wright in, probably, if I'm looking at, you know, who quote unquote deserves more playing time of late, then I would say probably Brandon Wright. You'd like to see a little more of him. I think since the Tony Douglas thing was taken care of, because, you know, he was such a drag when he was out there at the end of his run. He really was bad defensively, and the Grizzlies just suffered when he was out there. So once that was resolved, I don't think there's anyone that's a glaring, massive problem. I think, you know, James Ennis has been a disappointment this year. And maybe it's because of the way the minutes have been kind of jerked around or whatever, but he's been really bad since the All-Star break. And so I'd probably say you'd want to see a little less James Ennis, maybe a little more Troy Daniels. I'd say you could probably stand to see a little more Vince Carter. But he and Tony Allen, it's about the same. I mean, it's kind of a feel thing. You know, Jermichael Green, it's unfortunate that a guy that's as good as he is defensively and as important as he is to the Grizzlies has only played 25 minutes a game since the All-Star break because he just can't stay out of foul trouble and he just can't keep himself on the court. That's like, well, we'll talk about it in a different pod because we were already running way long on this pod, but you know, that would be a reason that you just have to wonder his offseason. What is his real, true, honest to goodness value for a guy that really can't stay on the floor? And that you don't always want to play in certain matchups. I don't know. It's a very interesting one. Jermichael, it's an interesting one. And then Koldar had one final question. Have teams figured out Fizdale's offense? Nah, I mean, I wouldn't say figured out. I don't think there's anything to really figure out. I think basketball is not necessarily about figuring it out so much. It's not like football or something like that where you know, if you know the plays, then you're going to be able to stop them. Teams pretty much know everybody's plays. You pretty much know what everybody likes to run, what they're going to run. Most teams can call out the other team's calls when they see them pretty quick. The coaches and the coaching staff immediately know, particularly the assistant that was the specific scout for that game. They'll see something happen in action, a movement, thing like that, and then they'll make the call immediately, and you know, that'll trigger a whole series of events. So I don't think it's about figuring it out. I think teams know what the Grizzlies are going to do. It's just about, you know, can the Grizzlies execute crisply enough to actually do it, and they've really struggled to do that. So to me, it's less about teams figuring out Fizdale and more about the Grizzlies being unable to execute with the speed and at the highest level they need to against good competition, if that makes any sense. Thanks again for the Q&A, and thanks again, everybody, for listening. Big thanks to our friends at Grizz Essentials for their continued sponsorship. Remember the code VC43. That's VCFORTHREE. Enter that code when you go to grizzessentials.com/LOGrizzlies, and you get yourself a free month of service. Big thanks to Grizz Essentials. Big thanks to all of you guys for all the questions. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of the podcast. Thank you for subscribing if you do. If you don't, please click that subscribe button. It's awesome, and I really appreciate that. Thank you for rating it. Thank you for telling your friends. I could not do this without you guys. So many, many thanks to all of you guys. And I hope you enjoyed this jumbo edition of the pod. We'll be back with a post-game pod after the Pacers matchup later on tonight or early tomorrow. In the meantime, have yourself a great hump day.